You know what time it is? It's Saturday, and it's time to talk with Emma.
We have a great guest today. His name is Larry Fenwa, and he is a radio talk show host as well. He does social and political issues. He is a former international ecology executive, business owner, college president, has a newsletter, and he also lives on an Arabian horse farm near Washington, D.C. So if that's not cool enough for everybody, I'm sorry. But that is too cool for words. And Larry's been here before. He's a friend of the show. We love having Larry on here. I just sit and listen to him talk all the time. And so, Mr. Larry, welcome to the show, my friend. Well, thank you so very much. It's been a while. Everybody's been calling me. People's been saying, when are you going to do your show again? And I said, as soon as I can. So we're doing a do-over. And Larry has been gracious enough to be my first guest on the new show. Thank you so much, Mr. Larry.
Well, you're entirely welcome.
Wonderful. So, as I mentioned before, he has a newsletter, and he's a political commentary guy. He does all kinds of stuff. We're just going to get right into it. So let's start with these high energy prices. I mean, the price of gas. I don't know what it is there by Washington, D.C., but here in southern Indiana, it's over $5. And it's just craziness. In the newsletter that you sent me, you know, you talked about the high prices going and financing Russia's war against the Ukraine. I mean, let's talk about that a little bit.
Right now, to fly a jet airplane with some sun have you know, maybe two other countries to fulfill our needs. We are now putting ourselves in a subordinate position to any of the suppliers. And of course, every other supplier other than the United States is Russia. So we have to buy Russian crude, and we also forced Europe to do the same thing. It's not only responsible for a lot of the inflation that we have, but it's certainly the cost of gasoline for cars and diesel for cars. And and also the fact that we have to buy so much from Russia is really contributing to their ability to have a war in Ukraine. It's the most destructive policy that a presidential administration could possibly come up with. And they do it because they think if they want the gasoline price to go high, because they say if the higher it goes, the faster we're going to start looking at alternative technologies. And that is just absolutely stupid.
I totally agree, because there's no, like you said, we don't have the technology yet. And, you know, they talk about all those wind turbines in, like, is it California and like that, but, you know, that's, what if the wind doesn't blow strong enough to turn that? They say, well, the wind blows all the time. Yeah, but it has to blow so hard, I think, unless I'm wrong, that to turn those, you know, the turbine, you know.
The other issue there is storage.
Yeah.
That's batteries and most of the chemical components of batteries are actually in China.
Yeah.
And that's the one area the United States is low on the natural resources. So, yeah, whatever we're not giving to Russia, we're also without giving it to China.
Well,
yeah,
and it's like, you know, the president is you know, bowing down to both of them. You know, it's like, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, I was doing some research for the show today, and it's like, you know, President Biden's China First agenda. I mean, my day job, is, you know, with a car manufacturer, and some of the microchips that go in the vehicles that, you know, we build at my other job, we get a lot of that stuff from China, and they get some of the iron ore, or some kind of metal from the Ukraine. Which I didn't know. I was talking to some of the salespeople the other day, trying to figure out what in the world was going on, why, you know, the parts wasn't coming in. And, you know, so it's just crazy. We have to go shake that man, you know. Say, what are you doing?
Yeah. movie is a novel.
No, I've heard of it, yeah.
The 1960s.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I saw the movie. Yeah, back in the 70s they made the movie?
Yeah,
yeah, like, right. But I mean the original one. Biden's son Hunter, doesn't he have a lot of connections over there with that, with either Russia or China or something to do with his supposed job that he was supposed to have?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what I thought, because, I mean, you see him going here and going there, and then all of a sudden he's, you know, at the White House talking to his dad, and, you know, then next thing you know, something, you know, some kind of tariff comes up, or some kind of, you know, dissolving the tariff, or getting rid of the tariff, or money being sent, or, you know what I mean? It just seems kind of odd to me that, you know, A, that, you know, the FBI or the CIA or whoever lets this go on. And, but I guess they can't really do anything as president, but yet they can. But they don't, so I'm confused.
Well, there are the deep states that try to impeach him and destroy him as a Trump administration.
Yeah.
The deep state is still there, and they still have the same loyalties. So don't, and now the leadership, of course, is very simple.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of, and there's other people that I know have said the same thing. It's like, what in the world, you know, they're turning it into communist China. You know, they're wanting to take away, you know, rights and privileges and, you know, our power to think and you know, given all the stimulus checks, I mean, everybody needs help every now and then, but how many of those have they given out? 4 or 5 or something like that? And, I mean, I could be wrong on the number, but... Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and that, and people say, oh, it's free money. No, it's not free money. You have to, that has to be paid back somehow, and it's going to taxes. You know, and gas taxes, and higher gas prices, and, you know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Larry, but, I mean, that's where... You know, people have to wake up and say, hey, you know, I mean, I was just a little kid in the 1970s, you know, I, you know, started school in 1970, so I was like 6 years old in 1970, but I can remember my parents, you know, going to the gas station and the lines around the block. And by the time we got up there, they were out of gas. You know, the station was out of gas. So, you know, it's just craziness. Well, that's true, but, you know. So, but, I mean, we could talk all day about this, but I want to get to Roe v. Wade. I mean, the turning over of Roe v. Wade. I mean, going and I mean, that is, to me, I mean, not just as a woman, but as a human being. You know, it's my body, it's my decision. And you're going to have all these people, all these women going, you know, to all these states that can still do it until it's, you know, I get, what's it called? You know, I mean, it became law, but I mean, the states, it looks like one by one is approving it. You know, they're going to go to different states to get abortions. Or when it gets totally illegal again, they're going to be going to places that might not even be a real doctor. You know what I'm saying? And they're going to go to back street, you know, like in the 50s and 60s, you know, and unless I'm wrong, I mean, I can just see that.
Well, maybe. So, the Supreme Court decision is far less comprehensive than the advocates of abortion on demand. All they said was there's no mention of abortion or anything like it in the Constitution. And therefore, the 10th Amendment says if there are no rights and no authority is given to the federal government, unless it is provided by the Constitution or by the consent of the states. Well, the Constitution, they made it very clear, and anybody who can read can tell that there's no mention of abortion in the Constitution. So where does that leave the whole question? Well, the Constitution says you can't have a federal law if the states have given you the authority. And since the states haven't even been involved, they haven't given the authority to the federal government. So what they said is, this is a subject that is the prerogative of the states. And the states have to go and figure out what they want to do. That's all they said. They didn't say anything about whether abortion is legal or illegal, or good or bad, or whether it's a woman or not. And they didn't, none of those questions was in the it's simply procedural. It just says there's no basis for a federal law. So in that case, the Constitution gives them a right to the states, and that's what we're telling you to do. And it's the states now have to go, and we have 50 experiments in democracy that are going to have to struggle individually with this problem. They're going to come up with different solutions. It's going to take time. Eventually, we hope that there will be a consensus that is met. It's very similar to the whole temperance movement. Mm-hmm. Movement that would bring two generations for it to become law, the 17th Amendment,
right.
And then another generation to dismiss it and make it legitimate. And that's where we are with abortion. Abortion is still very controversial. You can't have good laws unless you have consensus. There is no consensus that obvious. So the Supreme Court says, you gotta go and we gotta work with the states until we figure out, until it has a whole country forced by the population of American citizens. And that's the LBJ, that's how it's going to end up. So all of this angst that they are expressing and all of this desperation, that they're talking about, in the book just really doesn't have any basis for it. What a lot of people on the other side, on the left side, think is that these people are so upset because they know that if any debate on the topic that you're going to lose, the other people are going to lose, the forces are going to lose the cause. The real issue is that fetus a baby? Is it a baby? Because the baby doesn't have a right of a citizen to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If it does, then that is why the state has to protect it. And because that is the Constitution.
Right.
The fetus is not a human being. And the fetus is not a citizen. It's just like a sperm or some kind of stray scab that gets inside the woman's body. Then you can excise it anytime you want. But when you look at those pictures, sign acknowledges that a lot to do with this debate.
Right.
When you look at those pictures and you start seeing that little baby running, with arms and legs and head, and genitalia is moving, and hard to imagine that in a tumor.
Right. I mean, it's a human being. And then you get into the debate, when does life start, right? I've heard that debate for years. Does it start at conception or does it start when, the baby is, fetus and has the arms and the legs and, that sort of thing. There's all different kinds of stuff. But, then what was the point of Roe v. Wade to start with back in 1972? Is that when it was? Early 70s?
Yeah.
What was the whole point of them going to court to get the right court and to do abortion if technically by the Constitution it's not even in there? But didn't they make that a law? Or am I wrong?
It is a constitutional right of any woman to make a decision independently of government or even of her husband, as to whether or not to abort a child. Yes or not. And why was there so much pressure at that time? There's a lot of debate about that. My view is that in the 90s, that everything was pretty set as far as attitudes toward all these matters until the 1960s when they came about.
Right.
And something that has to do with making possible the entry of women into the workforce to start way back in World War II.
Right.
It really was very difficult because women kept getting married and then they couldn't do that work that the men had been doing. And so therefore it was kind of a half movement that they had the right, but you couldn't really exercise it. Common sense. So when the Eagle Clinton came along, it meant that they could then avoid pregnancy. And that meant trying to get equal rights, equal pay in the workplace in a way that saw that decade where the number of workforce in the United States, because all the women that could work suddenly became employable.
Right.
That had a lot to do with the prosperity of the 1970s and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So when the bill came around,
Yeah. I tend to agree to a point with that, but yeah, you're right, you know, on that part, because back then from, you know, just watching my grandparents and parents and stuff, you know, you didn't do anything without your husband's approval or your dad's approval, you know what I mean? So it was kind of liberating for women, I guess. But I believe our time is up, Mr. Larry. I know. I mean, it went so fast because it's like, holy cow, we just got started. So why don't you let everybody know about your newsletter and your website and your radio show and all that good stuff, and then we're going to wrap it up for this time. But I would love you to come back and we can chat some more. Oh, okay. Oh, okay. All right. Well, there we go. Well, I want to thank Dr. Larry one more time for being on the show. You have been awesome, my friend, and thank you for being a friend of the show. And we will talk again soon. Until next time, we'll see you later. Dr. Bob. How about that?
Yes, that's my moniker when it comes to my radio show, The Sports Doctor, or any of the articles that I do and on the show. Dr. Bob's great, Emma. Nice to be back with you.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm telling you, Dr. Bob's a friend of the show, and he's been on a few times. We talk feet, we talk sports, we talk a little bit of everything. Dr. Bob here is... he's a podiatrist, a doctor, and an ortho doctor for sports medicine. He's an author. He's a radio host. He's a man of the world. he's a good guy.
Emma, so, flattery will get you anywhere. You know,
hot dog.
Add to the health and wellness and fitness of the audience. Mm-hmm. Is what my whole goal is when I have the pleasure on joining shows like yours, whether right. It's the best shoe for my son or daughter, about one of my most famous articles, Women in High Heels Accepting the Challenge. We talk about the exercises. So we're glad to add some awareness as well as education in the important world of health and wellness, again, whether you're the best athlete in the world or you're their grandmother, and we want to stay healthy, or you're the grandkids, and we want to try to prevent all these youth sports. So fire away, young lady.
All right, my friend. With all the number of kids playing sports, I mean, kids have been playing sports forever, and all the injuries and stuff, from overworked muscles to concussions. So I know that on one of your shows, you had spoken about concussions and kids and everything. So let's start with concussions. I checked it out, and according to the CDC, brain injuries and concussions in children 17 years and younger in 2020 was 6.8% that have, you know, had a concussion.
The awareness, Emma, about the whole word concussion has exploded. Great. I've had people all over the world whose expertise is some aspect of dealing with, treating, identifying concussions.
Right.
And now we're paying much more attention. Years ago, it was in any sport, somebody really got hit in the head. Someone say, how many fingers?
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
It's been a nightmare. So the necessity of having the education of whoever's dealing with the youth sports, whether it's the coaches, the parents, whether it's the referees, all paying much, much more attention. And again, the huge situations in football that have brought this to just front and center, the challenge of concussions. And still to this day, Emma, nobody knows, Doc, how long is it going to take for my son or daughter to safely return to sports? And there is no exact science still.
Right.
So a lot of it is subjective, but we've come a long way, baby. And as a rule, you want to make sure that your son or daughter is honest in telling you whether they've had some trauma. And again, youth football, don't get me started. There is no safe football. It's concussions. It's collisions.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to understand this. And it's something that education is very, very important. There's a lot of parents who don't want their children to play contact sports. And it's a big topic of conversation. And people need to be, parents need to be educated. And they need to take any head trauma as a potential concussion seriously. The psychologists that I have on the show who have dealt with the high school world for decades say we have no idea what a problem this is. And we need to continue to pay attention.
Well, just like a few weeks ago, the professional football player who got hit and died on the field. Yes.
Well, that, again, that's one of these emergencies that everybody took a gigantic deep breath. All of us have never experienced this on live television on Monday Night Football.
Right.
It was the incredible care immediately.
Yeah, that he received.
Absolutely. Saved his life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was flipping. I got home and turned on the TV, and I flipped the channel, and there was like ambulances on the the football field and paramedics, and you know, you seen everybody and their neighbor.
Now you have to also take a deep breath and understand that 95% of youth sports at all levels, there's nowhere near this kind of prepared to be able to deal with these emergencies. We have to really pay attention to the fact that there are these defibrillators that are available if people know how to use them and people know where they are and et cetera. And the youth sports is a huge business, is a $20 billion a year business, traveling teams, clubs, teams, serious attention where you have my world also, the world of figure skating. And, you know, one of my poster boys, the tooth, I can't believe we're celebrating this week.
I know.
13 years that the young boy who grew up here in Naperville, Illinois, Evan Lysacek, won the Olympic gold medal in men's figure skate. I put orthotics in Evan's skates when he was 10. I'm still putting orthotics in 10-year-old skates who are already doing double jumps and taking things very, very seriously. So, or if your young son or daughter is a soccer player, or they're a gymnast, where we are specializing very, very early. So there is an epidemic, Emma, of youth sports overuse injuries, both physically and mentally. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Think of the overzealous parent on the sidelines or dealing with the injuries that happen. Ankle injuries is still one of the most common injuries we see in youth sports. And so we recommend, I don't care what your son or daughter, what sport they play. I don't care what their level is. One of the things we recommend big time in my book, Hashtag A Sports Parents, is strengthen your feet and ankles.
Yes. Yes.
Strengthening your feet and ankles. It's a chapter called Essential Exercises. And we also recommend big time work balance. Work on balance with your son or daughter in their sport. Imagine you're balancing on a mini trampoline. Imagine you're standing on tilt boards. So we've been for, I don't know, 40 years talking about this, which is, you know, how to prevent a lot of problems in youth sports. Or if you're a jogger or you're a walker and you're wondering why your hips hurt or your back hurts, we pay attention to foot mechanics. Are you in the best shoe for you? So as a sports podiatrist, you know, you might say, what the heck do you know about concussions? And I say, I just have experts in all these areas, nutrition, physical training, and all of these areas that go into, I'll tell you a funny story. One of my numerous guests is developing a documentary called Youth Sports, Where Our Children Play. I've had him on 10 times. The pandemic got in the way. Probably this spring or summer, you'll see the documentary that we paid such big attention to all these challenges. The funny story is, when he was first my guest 4 or 5 years ago, he said, youth sports is a $15 billion a year business, Dr. Bob. And a year or two later, while we're still talking about it and talking about all these things, he says, you know, Dr. Bob, it's a $17 billion a year business. And I had him on a month and a half ago, and he said, you know, Dr. Bob, it's a $20 billion a year business. It's almost a joke, which how big this is. And to understand the pressure on your son or daughter in their high school sport, especially in the traveling team sports, and the better your daughter is, you know, the pressure to play hurt.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I was playing softball, it's like I would get hurt and the coaches say, walk it off, you know, just walk it off, shake it off.
Now we've come away, baby.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that meant talk about ankles. I mean, that ankle, my ankles are the weakest part because my feet, I'd be walking and my ankle will go, you know, it'll go like that.
Talk a lot on the sports doctor. My science of orthotics is the orthotics are prescription inserts that go in your sports shoes, your figure skates, whatever. Right. Whether you're 8 years old and we're trying to enhance balance, we're trying to prevent falls, that we want optimum alignment as best we can. Are you flat footed? Do you have high arches? What's your foot mechanics? So when done properly, orthotics almost always are a big step up in trying to half the females I've seen over 40 years. I don't want to date myself, Emma. Young girls in sports are knee problems. I'm a foot specialist.
Yeah.
So the female athlete where your hips are wider, is more angled down to the knee. You're going through puberty, you're going through hormones that help create the kind of flexibility that, God willing, you'll be able to have children.
Right.
So the stress on the knees is in the world of ACL injuries and these knee injuries is still 4-1 girls to boys. And I'll tell you, I don't want to jinx myself, but the women athletes I've seen in all areas, Olympic volleyball and softball and running, etc. When we included orthotics, non-contact, I can count on one hand how many ACL injuries I've seen over the years, and I'm still yelling about it, that I want routine to pay big attention again to what are the biomechanics of your daughter when she's playing serious tennis already as a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And to pay big attention to adding sports podiatry on your team with nutrition and training. And yet again, when I talk to so many experts, Emma, in all these areas, coaching or parenting or high-level sports medicine, they're pulling their hair out, saying that still we're treading water, that still there's this philosophy of more is better.
Yeah.
And more pain, more gain.
Right.
And all kinds of things. And in the world of concussions, where, you know, Brian Urlacher, the great Hall of Fame middle linebacker of the Bears, years ago, he talking to somebody, and he threw in the expression that, you know, if I got my head dinged on the side in the game, I'd come to the side, I'd say to them, hey, my foot hurts, because I didn't want to have to go, you know, through the protocol, and they're going to keep me out for two games. It's an exaggeration, of course.
Right.
But don't kid yourself when it comes to the young athletes who are concerned about admitting to their mom or dad or to their coach, you know, I'm getting headaches, mom. And the psychologists in high school who would hear all these stories, you know, my son can't sleep. He's who knows how many times he's had trauma.
Yeah.
You know, ironically, the mental side is just as big a deal. One of the contributors to my book, Robert Andrews, is the founder of the Institute of Sports Performance in Houston. He's got a wall of gold medals because he's worked with all the Olympic gymnasts, the Simone Biles, all those teams.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they were flabbergasted what these kids kept to themselves. Again, in the doctoring and all of this abuse and the science of coming back from injury mentally. So we need to continue to pay much more attention. The better your son or daughter, the high level going for scholarships and all these pressures, the more we see it gets intense. So I tell sports parents all the time, number one, don't be a critic.
Right.
Don't evaluate your son or daughter's performance in the car on the way home. Try your best.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, you know, they do it all the time. Yeah.
Be educated.
Yeah.
Coaches and parents and experts who talk about this side of things all the time. I have a lot of them on the show. And again, if you go to sportsdoctorradio.com, you go to radio shows, you go back 10 years and you might hear or see the topic. Absolutely. Where we're including, the fact that, this is a very, very big challenge. And parents also, besides not being critics, sports parents need to be good listeners. You got to be talking to your son or daughter. Are you hurting?
Yeah.
You know, the famous Tommy John surgery in baseball, right, is now being done reluctantly many times on teenagers.
Because
of too much throwing and too much use.
Yeah.
So one of the chapters in my book, again, is the prodigy sports. And if you're in the good climate and you're a talented pitcher, you might be pitching year-round.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And the wear and tear on your arm and your elbow and your – oh, my God.
And even though doctors and therapists and all these experts agree, we want your son or daughter playing multiple sports. 80% of the women's gold medal soccer team grew up playing multiple sports. It surprises a lot of people. But still, the prodigy sports exist. And if your daughter's a gymnast or she's a figure skater, even if she's a tennis player or soccer, the pressure is to specialize. And we have to understand that we need to treat these kids and their families differently. Understand, we call it repetitive motion injuries. Think about that tennis player who's swinging the racket 1,000 times a week. So my famous sports therapist, the late Bob Guida, and I have a segment on my radio show, Bob's been gone here. I call it Bob Guy to Wisdom. And he would say, strengthen the opposites. And he would want these athletes to work on muscles that are involved with landing. He'd pay big attention to foot mechanics. Mm-hmm. Again, in preventing problems and trying to enhance performance where that's the interest. You know, you want to be a step or two quicker, strengthen your feet, man. Or woman.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, you watch, you know, football players or tennis players. You know, I love tennis. I tried playing when I was younger, but I wasn't any good.
You a fan?
I'm sorry?
Are you a tennis fan?
Yeah. Like the old, you know.
You remember Austin?
Yes.
I put orthotics in her tennis sneakers in the middle 80s. Nice. You remember
I love John McEnroe. Yeah.
Guy is an expert in the athletic training for tennis. And they flocked to him, Jimmy Connors, Nick
Bollard,
passed away, his academy. And the idea was tennis are the top of the line as far as athletes.
Yeah.
Just training much harder. But yes, my pedigree, I'll send you a picture of me and Tracy Austin on the sidelines. I had a girlfriend, and she was coming back from some chronic injuries.
Yeah.
And she was the poster girl for burnout.
Oh, you know? Absolutely.
Dealing with this was a big, big deal. Mm-hmm. I have contests a couple times a year, Emma, where we'll ask listeners, what sport requires the best athlete? It's a great question.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a million answers, but always was tennis was up there. As far as, you know, let's take a look at a five-setter, you know, with McEnroe or something. Novak, one of my faves.
Djokovic. Oh, yeah. I love him. But, I mean, the strength and the agility and the – can you imagine the when they get older, the knee pain? I mean, the arthritis from all,
well,
you know.
You're going to be a pro. And you're going to be in a running, jumping sport.
Yeah.
And you're going to deal with it. Now, again, the whole concussion side of things in the football world, where decades ago they woke up and said, holy cow, there's degenerative brain disease, CTE.
Well, that was another one of my questions to you. Yeah. I mean, where you have these football players that play, you know, that just retired and have played for like 10, 15 years or whatever.
Oh, you know what? All of what they go through was we watched on television. It really, really brought to the forefront what a game is. Now, another big factor, the athletes are much bigger.
They're much
stronger. So, again, these collisions, it's remarkable. Biomechanically, in sports medicine, to me, how these athletes can recover. And this is why rest and recovery, Emma, has become such a big deal in sports medicine, in all areas, where the ability to making sure that we're doing the best we can nutrition-wise.
Right.
We're with big attention to the mental side, visualization, meditation, trying to relax. You know, and you're getting paid millions of dollars a year. And what kind of pressure are you under if you're coming back from an injury? You know.
Well, yeah. And the coach saying, you know, are you ready yet? And the sponsor saying, you know, you got to get out there and, you know, or even if they're not on the field, they're going to, you know, places and opening stores or whatever they do, you know. I mean, it's crazy. And then you got to go back and.
Emma, are being paid. And I think rightfully so, but it's the Wild West. A great quarterback coming out of high school already. He's signing contracts with the, and this is a whole new crazy kind of mental challenge. And that's where we've had experts in that area on the sports doctor talking about even the financial challenges, again, of sports parents.
Yeah.
You know, you spend thousands of dollars a year on ice time for your figure skater or young hockey player, and you're dealing with that side of things, you know. But there's, you know, not there's so many great parts of all of this, so many positives, which we pay big attention to in the documentary and the articles that we write. Again, besides wanting to be, I have three big words we talk about. Number one is awareness.
Mm-hmm.
We, parents and coaches, to be aware of these challenges, both physically and mentally. We need education. We need parents and coaches and recruiters and everybody else to be educated about all of this stuff. And then we need positive action, where we need to be making changes to try to change. You know, you can't get a referee signed up, Emma. I'm exaggerating.
Right,
because
right.
Nobody wants to be a referee or an official because of the abuse they put up with.
Oh, yeah.
Even in youth sports. So this is why the challenge continues on both sides of the equation, and why I like to come on and really make a big deal out of all of it on shows like yours, because it's such an important part of trying to do the two things everybody cares about, right? Can I prevent injuries and problems? Somehow, can I stay out of problems? And number two, can I enhance performance or indicator?
Yeah.
You know, can my son or daughter jump higher? Can they be two steps quicker? You know what a big deal it was. And you're more effective. You know, take a look at girls and women's sports yourself.
Yeah.
Over you've played. These athletes are incredible.
Oh, they are. They are. I mean, it amazes me how they do what they do, you know. So
that's key to these young softball players and these. But then we started running into problems again with this. You know, they thought these underhand pitchers could pitch 5 days a week.
Yeah, and you can't. You just physically, you know, and then whenever they blow out their elbow or their arm, shoulder or their, you know.
And they're living on ibuprofen to be able to show up. This is a big chapter in the book, hashtag his sportsman. It's called Youth Sports and Drugs. We're not talking performance-enhancing drugs. We're talking over-the-counter
drugs, pain medicine.
And if my daughter doesn't take two Advil twice a day, her shin splints are killing her, and she has competition coming up.
Yeah.
And living on it. So this is a big problem. And why we're all looking at holistic things, strengthening, going to a good physical therapist, getting educated on the best exercises my son or daughter could be doing besides the sport.
Yeah. I mean, it just to do like a roundabout thing. So you're not, like you said, just repetitive on one thing. Right.
Nobody's gonna crazy. Not everybody's a gold medalist.
No. No.
But I got news for you. When we talk about this mental pressure, whether it's Michael Phelps and how incorporated mental training throughout the internet.
Right.
And the fact that even someone like him, the best in the world, had problems, or Nicole Biles, the gymnast, who in the Summer Olympics didn't compete because she said, you know, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So mental health.
Well, I hate to do this, Dr. Bob, but where'd you go?
Time flies when you're having a good time.
Time flies. Yes, it does. And my computer is acting stupid here. So we've got 10 minutes left in our chat. So, we've covered pretty much a lot of stuff. I wanted to talk about the overuse and everything, and we got into that. I'm sorry.
How about women in high heels? Women in wearing heels.
Well, there you go. And I was looking for my thing. It went out of my head. Women in high, I can't wear high heels. My ankles go like that. I fall on my face. I can't do it.
In podiatry, whether it's jamming the feet in the shoe, the ball, the foot.
No, I can't do that.
Pressure on the ball.
Your toes are like that.
Right. Putting pressure on the corns of calluses.
Yeah.
We have a lot of business women who live in heels. They're not wearing 3-inch spikes.
No, but they're
wearing sometimes a different heel height. So we have a few recommendations for women who live in heels. And number one, again, is to give yourself some toe room. choose shoes that don't jam your feet with the toes together. If you have problems with hammer toes or corns or calluses, absolutely include podiatry. They can save you by trimming down.
And bunions. Exactly. Bunions.
Another thing is when bunions are present, the dislocation of the big toe and the bump, and many times foot type, this is important, Emma, the foot type that develops that's inherited. You know something? And years ago in my surgical career, we did surgery on the 68-year-old grandma. We did bunion surgery on her 45, 50-year-old daughter, and we were seeing trouble already in the 14, 13-year-old developing the bumps. So we want to pay attention to the fact that foot tight can be acquired. Right. And if we see bunions, we want to pay attention to hammer toes. So we don't want to jam the foot in the ball of the foot. And we want to tell women, if you wear heels all the time, again, strengthening your ankles, doing some band exercises, alternate the heel height. When I would see European young women who were also athletic, they grew up in heels in many instances. And then all of a sudden we would see when they started becoming more and more active, they would have Achilles tendon problems because they shortened the calf muscle by the heel height.
Yeah.
Inch and a half to 2 inch is when we start changing your posture. When we start changing the posture to just walk in the heels, you know that.
I can't do it.
Seeing a good chiropractor, strengthening again your core, your hips and your low back can save you if you're in heels every day. And this is a large part of our population, especially in the business world, where women are in dresses or skirts and they're wearing heels. And they want to be able to, like, you know, Jessica Parker with Sex and the City, famous. And then,
big old heels. I'm telling
you. Today, she says, if I knew then what I know now,
I wouldn't have done it.
I wouldn't have done it, quote unquote.
No.
So definitely, come on, 50-something% of the population are women.
Yeah.
And you have to understand, again, number one, postural problems, knees. Again, your daughter plays sports.
Yeah.
You want to be aware of the biomechanics and the foot mechanics and consider very serious, at least over the counter, super feet, but properly.
Now, what about like the.
Go ahead.
Yeah. What about like the Dr. Scholl's? You go into Walmart and they've got a Dr. Scholl's.
It's like saying to you, you know, Emma, you wear glasses. And go to Walgreens, and if you want to pick up some readers and some generals, you might find them helpful. Yeah. That's not being casted or scanned for prescription.
Well, I mean, for like a quick fix until they can come and see you or, you know what I mean?
Pick up some super feet. Yeah. Dr. Scholl's over-the-counter arch supports I've used for 40 years where I would tell somebody, I think you need more support. Pick up some Dr. Scholl's arch supports your size.
Yeah.
Something flexible, and then see them, wear them in your shoes. Like, you know, the most common foot condition we see in podiatry with active people is called plantar fasciitis. Arches, heels, common. They hurt. They bother me.
They do.
I want to then tell them to, you can pick up something over the counter. Almost always it's helpful. And if it is helpful, orthotics could be magic for you. Still way underused in our population. It's not only podiatry,
physical,
sports medicine, but the expertise, like an eye doctor, optometry. Uh-huh. You want glasses?
Oh yeah.
You want to see?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Podiatry save you.
I hate to do this, but it's time to wrap this up. I mean, it goes so fast. Yes. I mean, it always goes fast with you. We'll have to try and do a longer one next time.
This is what happens when you have a radio host as a guest.
No. I love to have, you know, folks like you on, because I give you a question and you just go. You know, I mean, that's part of it. You get to learn, and you get to learn from a pro. Well,
doctors in segments. We want to, again, add those three areas. We want to add awareness. We want to talk about education, and we want to be able to talk about taking action and paying attention. If people go to my website, sportsdoctorradio.com, if they go over to radio shows that go back years, we're going to have you on sometime in the near future. We'll add you to the roster. We have thousands of followers, Emma, on LinkedIn and Twitter. I can't tell you how many guests I get from those platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Sports Doc, DOC Radio. Follow us on Twitter. We have a lot of good sports medicine, fitness, and wellness information. So join the party.
Oh, absolutely. And I just want to thank you once again, my friend, for coming on.
Great.
And, you know, you have an open invitation to come on anytime you want. We'll chat about.
Yes, we'll do a sports medicine is in segment, maybe monthly. Talk to me about that. At you.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. All right. Well, we'll talk to you later, Dr. Bob. That was Dr. Bob.
I'll send you the Deborah's site for us to spread the word.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll do it. All right. See ya.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bob.
Thank you, Emma.
We appreciate you tuning in to Let's Talk with Emma every other week on Saturdays at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time.